Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm your host, Mike Ferguson, and I think we've got a really interesting show for you today. I hope you enjoyed our first episode, but if you haven't listened to it yet, make sure you go back and download that one. Also, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcast to make sure you get all future episodes. I've tried to submit mine to as many places as possible to reach the widest audience. Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime, and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. So let's dive right in and talk about the fascinating subject that is Richard Kuklinski. It's kind of a hard name to say, so if I butcher it, please forgive me. Richard Kuklinski is not a serial killer in the normal sense that a lot of the people that we'll be talking about on this show are, but he did kill a lot of people. He's admitted to killing over 100 people, and in some interviews, in excess of 200. He began killing people that got in his way or annoyed him, and then eventually graduated to becoming a contract killer for the mob.
An approximate guess. Approximate will go with more than 100.
How do you feel about killing?
I don't. It doesn't bother me. Doesn't bother me at all. I don't have a feeling one way or the other. I think if I had a choice, I wouldn't.
So, hopefully you got from that this is one scary guy. Let's talk a little bit about Richard's childhood. Richard Kuklinski was born on April 11th, 1935, in the Polish section of Jersey City, New Jersey. He was the son of Irish and Polish immigrants. His mother, Anna, worked in a meatpacking plant, and his father, Stanley, worked on the railroad and was a violent alcoholic. Richard was beaten routinely by both of his parents. And this is something that we see a lot with killers, serial killers, and the like. But you're going to see a few of the normal traits that you see in these type of killers in Richard. So Richard was the second of four children. He had an older brother who died from injuries inflicted upon him by the father, Stanley. At the time of his brother's death, it appears that the family lied to police, saying that the boy had fallen down a flight of steps. Richard had another brother who was given a life sentence for the rape and murder of a 12-year-old girl. So in 1970, Richard's brother Joe, who at the time was 25, stole the dog of a local 12-year-old girl. Telling the girl that he'd recovered her lost pet, Joe tricked the child into following him to the roof of a building. There, Joe raped and murdered the girl. He then threw her body and the dog off the roof to the street over 40 feet below. The dog survived the fall, and it was really by the dog's howling and crying and that this alerted the neighbors to the crime, and the police were able to apprehend Joe pretty quickly. Joe confessed, and basically in the local jail, the guards encouraged other inmates to brutalize Joe. So he did get a little bit of what was, coming to him. He had just raped and murdered a 12-year-old girl. I'm not condoning that, but I'm also not, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it either, to be honest with you. Another, we talked about Kuklinski. There we go. Hard as shit to say that. We talked about Kuklinski showing some of the traits that killers show when they're young. Another thing that he did as a youngster was he began killing cats. Again, hallmark of killers, serial killers, basically any time that children torture small animals like squirrels, birds, cats, dogs, especially without showing any type of remorse, those kids are likely going to grow up to be sociopaths, which I don't think there's any doubt that Richard Kuklinski was a sociopath. So big time warning sign there, as he started killing cats and mutilating other animals. So Richard graduated to his first murder at the age of 13 when he ambushed and beat the leader of a small gang of teenagers known as the Project Boys. This leader of the gang had bullied Richard for some time, and following a pretty bad beating, Richard sought revenge, and he attacked this kid with a wooden dowel, eventually beating him to death. He denied wanting to kill this kid, but he did end up killing him. The kid never woke up. Kuklinski then dumped the boy's body off a bridge in South Jersey, but before he did, he removed his teeth and chopped off his fingertips with a hatchet in an effort to try to prevent identification of the body. So that's pretty grown up shit right there. I mean, we're talking about a kid that's 13 years old, has just retaliated against a kid that's been bullying him. And not only does he kill him, but he has the forethought to remove his teeth and chop off his fingertips. I mean, at 13 years old. But Richard didn't stop there. After he killed the leader, he went in search of the other boys in the gang. He took a metal pole from a trash can and beat all of them nearly to death. He didn't kill them, but he beat them very, very severely. So it was about this time, 13, 14, 15, Richard began killing, basically. And he would kill anybody that annoyed him. He killed loudmouths that reminded him of his father. He killed people that he played pool against. If they looked at him wrong or said the wrong thing. Basically, the whole west side of New York City became his testing ground. He started honing his talents. killing people. And all this time, the police basically thought that, you know, these were just bums that were killing each other. They really never looked into it at this point. And Richard just kept on. In one instance, Richard killed a group of boys who were messing with him while he was traveling. He was down in Georgia, and he was driving his car, and these boys were in a van, and they were messing with him on the road.
Driving in Georgia one time, and we were riding down the road, and there was a couple of vans running around, and they were hooping and hollering there. I guess they were having a good old time and maybe drinking and whatnot. They decided, I guess it was interesting to play with a guy from New Jersey, and they started to click-clack and with their vans and push me here and push me there off the road, and they were running in and out. And what their problem was, I really don't know. Never did know. But it came to a point where I got extremely mad about that, and but it was silly of me because I was away from home. I had no backing. I had no problem. I only had one weapon, which was in the trunk, which was a .357 with a hair trigger. So I stopped the car and got out, opened the trunk. I had the release and went in the trunk and took the .357 and just stood there. Apparently their eyesight mustn't be too good, because I don't think I'd walk up on a guy with a .357 standing by his side. But these fellas did. Foolish mistake. They all died.
So it wasn't long after this that Richard's criminal activity caught the attention of a crime family in Newark, and they hired him to begin killing other gang members, opposition. In later interviews, Richard would say that he had killed between 50 and 100 people before he even got into his serious mob contract hitman work that was later to come. So one thing I haven't mentioned is, Richard's appearance. You know, he's 6'5". Eventually, he's close to 300 pounds. So he was an imposing figure. And after doing some work with the crime family in Newark, he became associated with the Gambino crime family, much more famous. And one of the soldiers of the Gambino crime family was a guy named Roy DeMeo. And Kuklinski met DeMeo basically because he owed money to a member of DeMeo's crew, and DeMeo had sent several members of his crew to intimidate Kuklinski, and those guys, they beat him up, they pistol whipped him, and, beat him pretty badly. After this, Kuklinski repaid the debt that he owed, and he actually began working with the DeMeo gang. He earned their respect basically because he continually earned cash. And then he started gradually drifting into other criminal activities. So at one point, according to Kuklinski, DeMeo takes him out in his car one day, and they park on a city street. DeMeo selects a random target, just a man out walking his dog. He then orders Kuklinski to kill this man. Without hesitating, Kuklinski got out, walked towards the man, shoots him in the back of the head as he passes by, and just keeps on walking. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust SimpliSafe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy, or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. From then on, Richard became Roy DeMeo's favorite enforcer. You know, he looks at what he was doing as a job no different than most of us, you know, get up in the morning, go to work, put in our 8, 9, 10 hours, whatever it is, with no emotion as far as what you're doing from day to day. That's basically how he looked at this contract killing that he was doing for Roy DeMeo in the Gambino crime family. But it's chilling. It's chilling to sit and listen to him talk about, you know, taking another person's life, like, you know, me filing a TPS report. You know, it really is something. So while all this is going on, you know, Kuklinski's now a hit man for the Gambino crime family. He meets a woman named Barbara. So Richard and Barbara get married. They have two daughters and a son. And they start a family, you know, and a life. And they live in a suburban home. By all accounts, his family and neighbors, they're never aware of his activities. Instead, they believe that he's a successful businessman. The only thing that was ever said that was that sometimes he would get up and leave the house at any time of the day or night. You know, they didn't know what it was, but, you know, obviously he's leaving the house to do a job. Barbara would later say sometimes he would even get up in the middle of dinner. You know, if he were to get a call, it was not unusual for him to stop right in the middle of dinner and have to leave to go do a job. Later, Barbara would say that she didn't really know what Richard was doing. She had an idea, but she didn't know that he was killing people. She described his behavior as, you know, I guess you would call it bipolar. She called it Good Richie and Bad Richie. So Good Richie was a hardworking provider for his family. He was an affectionate father and husband who enjoyed spending time with his family. Now, on the flip side, Bad Richie would appear now and then. Sometimes, you know, one day it would be Good Richie. The very next day would be Bad Richie. Sometimes Bad Richie wouldn't come out for months. The problem was Bad Richie was prone to, you know, fits of rage and violence. He was physically abusive to Barbara, and he was emotionally abusive to all of them, Barbara and the three kids. Authorities would describe Richard as unusual amongst both mobsters and killers. Apart from the fact that he has this very violent temper and, you know, he's killing people, he had none of the vices that were common among criminals. He didn't do drugs. He didn't drink alcohol. He was not a womanizer, and he didn't gamble. You know, in those days, I guess that was pretty strange for, you know, a criminal of his stature. The other thing that they thought, you know, his motives for murder were also unusual. I mean, they didn't fit neatly into the standard categories of a lot of the people that, especially the people that we'll be talking on about on this show in future episodes. You know, like I said, he looked at this as a job. You know, he was a hitman. He killed people for money. You know, early on, he killed people just because either he enjoyed it or, you know, he got so upset that they looked at him wrong. But at a certain point in his life, while he was this hitman, he was killing people for money, and that's all it was. He had no emotion. You know, he could stab, pull the trigger, whatever method he chose to carry out the hit. And then he would go home to his family, and he could sit and have dinner and, just like anybody else. And he wouldn't think about it. He wouldn't lose a minute of sleep over it. So Kuklinski eventually earns a nickname, and this nickname is what he'll be, you know, become known as, and it is the Iceman. He earns this nickname because he begins to experiment in disguising the time of death of his victims. And he does this by freezing their corpses in a big industrial freezer. He would later tell an author that was writing a book about him that he got the idea from another hitman named Robert Prong. Prong's nickname was Mr. Softy because he drove a Mr. Softy truck to blend in with the rest of the neighborhood. So here's Robert Prong driving around a Mr. Softy truck selling ice cream while carrying out hits. But it's said that Prong, you know, eventually teaches Kuklinski different methods of killing. And one that would become Richard's one of his favorites was cyanide. He used cyanide in a number of different ways to kill victims. It's said that, he would pour it in a drink. He would be at a club acting like he was drunk, accidentally bump into the person and either spill, into their drink or, into their face or on their skin. Or I've read it a couple of different ways, but he used cyanide in a number of ways to kill people. The other thing that he got from Prong was remotely detonated hand grenades. Prong apparently was some type of demolition expert, and he taught Kuklinski a lot of things about explosives and grenades and things like that. And so eventually Prong asks Kuklinski to carry out a hit on Prong's wife and child. And one thing that, if you believe it or not, Kuklinski has said that I've read in a bunch of different places, I've seen in interviews, that he would never kill a woman or a child. So the theory is that this angered him. And in 1984, Prong is found dead, shot to death in his Mr. Softy truck. It's never proven that Kuklinski is the killer behind this, but that's the theory. So now we get into the 1980s. Kuklinski's been working as a hitman now for the mafia for about 25 years. He starts to branch out and he starts his own crime ring. And he's looking, for different avenues of making money, and he's devising new ways to profit from killing people. One case in particular that I thought was very interesting was the case of pharmacist Paul Hoffman. So Hoffman, as a pharmacist, he wanted to purchase Tagamet from Kuklinski. Now, a lot of you may know Tagamet is, an antacid. You can buy it anywhere today, but back then, it was a prescription-only drug. Kuklinski claimed to, have a large supply and was willing to sell it at a very low cost. So Hoffman figures out that he can make a very large profit, and he wants to buy a large amount of Tagamet, and he is going to pay Kuklinski $25,000. So the drugs used to treat peptic ulcers, heartburn, things like that. So Hoffman's going to resell this through his own pharmacy and make a lot of money. So on the afternoon of April 29th, 1982, Hoffman meets Kuklinski at a warehouse. I swear to gosh, I cannot say Kuklinski. He meets Kuklinski at a warehouse, and they're going to do the deal. Hoffman gives Kuklinski the $25,000. It's at this point that Richard tells Hoffman that the business deal is a fake.
He took the bag, door opened it, showed me a whole mess of money. Mess of cash. He said, "Look, I got the money right here." And he came back. He says, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Well, how am I going to get this merchandise? I put the gun under his chin, and I said, there is no merchandise. And I shot him. He didn't die. The gun jammed. He was gurgling. I had hit him. It was, blood was pouring out of his mouth. And, he was in a, I would imagine a lot, it looked like he was in a lot of pain. So there was a tire iron in there. I took the tire iron and hit him with it, which knocked him out. And he died. I then took him and put him in a 50-gallon drum, put it on the side of a motel. It was behind Harry's Corner. I listened to the people. I went in Harry's every morning. The thing was there for a long time. I looked at it every day. It was there. I went in Harry's every day. One day it was just missing. Continued to go in Harry's to see if anything was said about it. Nothing was said. I don't know what happened to the drum.
So Kuklinski is killing people this whole time. You know, like Paul Hoffman, and he's getting sloppy. You know, we're in the early 80s, and the first major mistake that Richard made was discovered in December of 1982. And this is the decomposing body of 37-year-old Gary Smith, and it's discovered, Gary's body is discovered under the bed in a hotel room in New Jersey. So Smith had, and Kuklinski knew each other. They often ran auto theft scams together with another man, Daniel Deppner. And at some point, Richard and Deppner decide to kill Gary Smith, which they did on December 23rd. And they killed him by feeding him a cyanide-laced hamburger. Here's where the cyanide comes back in their room at the motel. Well, unfortunately for them, Smith took longer to die from the cyanide than they thought. And Richard grew impatient, and he had Deppner strangle Smith with a lamp cord. Deppner's ex-wife, Barbara, was in on it. She was supposed to come back and bring a car. She never comes back. So what do Kuklinski and Deppner do? They place Smith's body in between the mattress and the box springs in this hotel room, and they just leave. So 4 days go by. A number of people rent this room, sleep, do the other things that people do in hotel rooms on top of what is a decomposing Gary Smith. Eventually the smell gets so bad that somebody complains. I can't believe it took 4 days, but eventually it does get so bad. Somebody complains and they come investigate and they find Gary Smith's body. Now, according to forensic pathologist Michael Bodden, And if you don't know who Michael Bodden is, you don't watch enough true crime. If it had not been for the ligature mark around Smith's neck that was created by the lamp cord, the death probably would not have been ruled a homicide. They probably would not have caught the cyanide on its own. So, mistake number one. Mistake number two is Kuklinski turns on Daniel Deppner and he kills him. So Deppner's body is found on May 14th, 1983, when basically a vulture is picking at it and a bicyclist is riding down a road in a wooded area of New Jersey, spots the bird and sees the corpse. Kuklinski had put the body inside of a green garbage bag before dumping the body. And really, he took it 2 or 3 miles away from a ranch where he and his family often went riding. So again, he's just really starting to get sloppy in the way that he's doing things. Also during this time, it's my understanding that, you know, Richard was starting to become, you know, starting to have a lot of anxiety. He's starting to get into a lot of other things. And this is probably what results in him getting sloppy. The medical examiner, so they list Deppner's cause of death as undetermined, even though they noted some pinkish spots on his skin. And so all of a sudden, business associates of Richard Kuklinski start, you know, being found dead. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Now we get to Louis Mazgay. So on September 25th, 1983, Kuklinski makes another big mistake when Louis Mazgay is found dead near a town park in Orangetown, New York. Mazgay has a bullet in his head. Kuklinski, as he had done many times before, we talked about this, is how he got his nickname. He attempted to disguise Mazgay's time of death by storing his corpse in an industrial freezer for 2 years. The problem was that when he took it out of the freezer, he did not allow the body enough time to thaw before he dumped it. So when they find the body, the medical examiner, you know, has the body on his slab for whatever you call it. And, you know, they open it up. They're doing the autopsy. They find ice crystals inside of Masgay's body. And this is on a very, very warm September day. So, you know, it wasn't very hard to figure out that the body had been frozen. Again, this is another person that is a known associate. Because, you know, again, don't forget that the police, even though they haven't pinned anything on Kuklinski yet at this point, they know who he is. He's on their radar. Now you have at least three people that are known associates of his wind up dead. They're really looking at him big time. But it was this discovery that helped authorities figure out what Kuklinski had done in the past by using the freezer to disguise time of death. So eventually there are five unsolved homicides that get linked to Richard Kuklinski because he is the last person to have seen each of them alive. We talked about Hoffman, the pharmacist. We talked about Smith, Deppner, Masgay, and then the fifth is a gentleman named George Maliband, who was a friend of Richard's. So in 1985, the New Jersey Criminal Justice Department creates a task force. This is composed of several different law enforcement agencies, and the whole task force is nicknamed Operation Iceman. It's dedicated to nothing but arresting and convicting Richard Kuklinski. So how this operation went down is they have an undercover agent by the name of Dominic Polifrone, I believe is how you say his name. So Polifrone gets close to Kuklinski over time. I mean, this didn't happen overnight. There's a detective named Pat Kane. He had started the case against Richard, you know, 6 years earlier. So that would have been 79. So like I said, you know, Richard Kuklinski had been on the police radar for quite some time, but he was good at what he did. He knew how to kill. He had a lot of practice. And again, he used the freezer trick to disguise time of death. That really threw off the authorities for a lot of his hits. So Detective Polifrone, working undercover, is working with a close friend of Kuklinski's named Phil Solomine. That's how Dominic is able to get in with Kuklinski. And Dominic Polifrone is posing to Kuklinski as another hitman. And he's going by the name Dominic Michael Provenzano. So Polifrone is telling Kuklinski, you know, they're talking on the phone, and he's telling Kuklinski that he wants to hire him for a hit, and he's recording Kuklinski speaking in detail about how he would carry it out.
I portrayed myself as a hitman. I told him I worked for the wise guys downtown New York, and my brother was a good fella downtown, and I went by the name of Dominic Michael Provenzano.
United States have a few problems I want to dispose of. I have some rats I want to get rid of.
Yeah. Only fucking thing I don't understand. Don't you use a fucking piece of iron to get rid of these fucking people? Use this fucking, cyanide?
Why be messy? You can do it nice and calm.
Ever let anyone go? For whatever reason, did you ever decide to let someone go?
Yes. But then I thought better of the idea and shot him anyway.
Did you ever murder anyone you liked?
All my friends did. At one point in time, I'm sure I liked them.
But not at the moment of killing them.
I might have even liked them then. Honor among thieves? There's no such thing. You see, because I was put in prison by a man I knew 30 years, and I liked him. Big mistake. I had one friend too many. I'm now serving multi-life sentences because of my one friend. And he's the only friend I didn't kill.
So obviously there, Kuklinski's talking about this Phil Solomon, who he had known for 30 years. Again, you know, he's already killed all of his other friends, Deppner, Mazgay, Maliband, Smith, and this Phil Solomon that he'd known for 30 years, I believe gets to the point where he thinks he's next. So at this point, he's willing to work with police. He's able to get Polifrone in with Kuklinski. And that's who you heard in the very first part of that clip was Polifrone talking about going undercover as Dominic Michael Provenzano. So now we get to December of 1986. It is arranged for Kuklinski to meet with Polifrone to get some cyanide for a planned murder, which was supposed to be an attempt on a police detective working undercover. Polifrone had been talking to Kuklinski, had been recording him. Again, in that clip, that second piece of that, that's what you heard was Kuklinski and Polifrone going back and forth talking about, ways to kill people, and Kuklinski talking about cyanide because, why be messy? Kuklinski, he decides not to go through with this planned murder. He's starting to get suspicious, and he goes home instead. Doesn't go to the meeting. But the police already had enough on him, so he's arrested at a roadblock 2 hours later. They find a gun in his car, and his wife is charged as well with trying to prevent his arrest. All in, prosecutors charged Kuklinski with 5 murders, 6 weapon violations, as well as attempted murder, robbery, attempted robbery. Officials later say that Kuklinski had large sums of money in Swiss bank accounts, and that he had a reservation on a flight to Switzerland. So it was a matter of time before he was going to, skip the country. Kuklinski's held on a $2 million bail and made to surrender his passport. So this is 86, he's arrested. It's not until March of 1988 that the trial ends, and the jury finds Kuklinski guilty of 2 murders, but they find that the deaths were not proven to be by Kuklinski's own hand, and so he doesn't face the death penalty. They know he's involved, but I guess they couldn't prove that beyond a reasonable doubt that, you know, he did it himself. So he spared the death penalty. In all, he's convicted of 5 murders, and he's sentenced to consecutive life sentences. Somehow, though, still eligible for parole, but not until he's 110 years old.
Law enforcement authorities have arrested one of the most notorious contract killers in state history. A self-employed Bergen County man is behind bars, charged with 5 murders, and prosecutors are investigating his involvement in dozens more.
This is unwarranted, unnecessary. These guys watch too many movies.
He is such a cold-blooded killer, they call him the Iceman. After being convicted of 2 murders, he confessed to 2 others in court today.
I shot George Melvin 5 times. Louis Masgay on July 1st, 1981. I shot him once in the back of the head.
So there eventually you hear that Kuklinski does confess to the murders. And you know, it's at this time that his family finds out that he's been living this double life. You know, how much his wife knew, you know, there's really no way to tell, but in everything that I looked at, read and saw, you know, she seemed pretty shocked. So I do think he was doing a pretty good job at leading a double life, and although she may have known that he was into something, I don't think she thought that he was out killing what could have been upwards of 100 to 200 people. So Kuklinski's in jail, you know, never to get out. And in 2005, he's been in jail for 17 years. And he's diagnosed with a rare disease, some type of inflammation of the blood vessels. And he's transferred to a medical center, secured medical center, in Trenton, New Jersey. I did read something about the fact that he had asked the doctors to make sure that they revived him if he flatlined. But apparently his wife had already signed a do not resuscitate order. And a week before his death, the hospital called Barbara to ask if she wished to rescind that instruction. And she declined. So, you know, again, she's probably, why would she? You know, she finds out what he's been doing all this time. So Kuklinski dies at age 70 on March 6, 2006. And I don't think other than probably his kids, because, you know, by all accounts, everything I read, he was actually a pretty good dad. So I'm sure his kids mourned his death. But the guy was a bad guy, and he killed a lot of people. And so I don't think he was missed by many other than his kids, like I said. So that's our podcast for today. I hope you enjoyed it. I think Richard Kuklinski is a fascinating character. He's not the usual serial killer. But he's probably one of the most prolific killers, depending on the accuracy of, you know, some of the things that he said. You know, I've heard 30 to 50 to 100 to as high as 200. I don't think there's any way we'll ever know, but he could be one of the, you know, most prolific murderers that we will ever talk about on this show. So I'd like to thank everyone for downloading and listening to the podcast. You know, I'm an independent podcaster, so I don't have a sound guy. I'm my own sound guy. I don't have a big media corporation behind me. So your support means absolutely everything. It's what's going to keep this show going and make it successful. So I'd ask you to please visit our website at www.truecrimeallthetime.com. There you can see all the contact information in order to follow the podcast. You can follow it on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Click on the donate button. There's a number of different ways you can support the show financially if that's something you're interested in. One thing I would definitely ask is that you bookmark the site and click through our Amazon banner, especially during this holiday season, anytime you're doing your Amazon shopping. This is a great way to support the show and help defray some of the production costs, and it doesn't cost you anything. You know, your price is the same as it would be if you went to Amazon directly. It's just that Amazon gives us a little love back for the show for helping direct you there. So look for next week's episode. And as always, stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.